Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air, KALW's weekly magazine of most things culturally considered. I'm your host, David LaTulipe. This week I'll be talking with composer and vocalist Lisa Bialava about the Chrissy broadcast, a site-specific composition which will be performed by hundreds of musicians at Chrissy Field later this month. Spanish conductor Pablo Eras Casado shares his San Francisco Symphony program details, mostly music of Mendelssohn and Thomas Addis over these next 2 weeks. Plus, Lauren Gunderson and Marissa Wolf from Crowded Fire Theater talk about their show, The Taming, and their roles respectively as playwright and director. And as it's the first Thursday of the month, music critic Joshua Cosman will share his classical music picks for the very busy Performing Arts Month of October. Stay with us. That's the music of my first guest, Lisa Bialava, from her work Tempelhof Etude. San Francisco-born composer and vocalist Lisa Bialava is back in town to orchestrate a massive happening in Chrissy Field later this month. Lisa, who now makes her home in New York City, was a 2009 winner of the Rome Prize and spent a year composing as a fellow at the American Academy in Rome. In addition to touring around the world to hear her own works, she is a vocalist with the Philip Glass Ensemble. Lisa, welcome back home.
Thank you very much.
And I'm not hearing you quite loud enough there. Let's make sure we have you. Oh, there's the button.
Oh, there we go.
Not quite pushed all the way. It was partially pushed, but there it is.
I could project, but...
Suboptimal. Welcome back.
Thank you.
So this event is being billed as a broadcast. Now, we're listening to radio. People think of radio and TV broadcasts.
Right.
Why is Chrissy called a Chrissy broadcast?
Yeah, that's a very good question. It's called broadcast because the groups that participate in this performance, there will be 15 different existing groups, middle school, high school groups, adult amateur groups. Those groups all start together physically at the center of Chrissy Field, and over the course of the composition, which is about an hour, they actually move away from each other. And the original sort of pre-technological definition of broadcast is to cast or scatter in all directions. So it's a kind of a very literal sort of Luddite use of the word broadcast.
Okay. Now, where did you come up with this idea of this massive happening in a public space?
Well, I had already been working in sort of semi-massive performances in public space, chamber orchestral performances in public space. There's a piece I wrote called Chance Encounter, which is for orchestra and soprano. Susan Naruki was the one who toured that around with me, and the Knights Orchestra, which you just heard. And that piece came about because I was... Susan and I sort of conceived of this piece together because we were interested in finding just new ways of experimenting with using acoustic music and making actual concert-like experiences happen out in transient public space, just to see what that would be like. And this piece was very successful, and we did it in Rome at the end of my Rome Prize year in May of 2010, and just after that it got very hot and there wasn't any AC in my room, so I went to go visit friends in in the Berlin area, and they actually had just opened the Tempelhof field at that point to actual people to just come in and be in the field together. Mm-hmm. It used to be closed because it was a former military airfield. But at this point now, they have actually opened it up, but they haven't changed it from an airfield into an actual, you know, into a park ground yet. It still has runways and things like that. And we went on the field, and I just thought, this is a fantastic space. It just seems like an amazing place where music could happen. I had just come off the performances in Rome, and I imagined that hundreds of musicians would probably need to articulate a space like that if I was going to stick with the acoustic music concept.
So is it just by happenstance that people would hear this event, or was it advertised? Was it something that
people looked
forward to?
Yes and yes. I mean, I didn't want to sort of keep it a secret. You know, people heard about it, and of course, since there's so many participants, you can't really, you know, keep them from talking about it. I mean, you've got, if everyone brings their sister, you know, you already have an audience of almost, you know,
or mentions it via social media.
Yeah. And people are excited about it, so they came. But we also did one of the things about the piece that matters a lot to me, no matter what city it's done in, and this is talking about the sort of the set, which I'm calling airfield broadcasts, because now that I'm doing it in a second city, I've realized that there are many cities that have these former airfields that are now public parks, and Crissy Field is one of them.
Right.
And these are wonderful areas because they, can you imagine having a region that is that large just being given to a city, just here, make a park here? It's almost always industrial or former military spaces that are given to cities that have that kind of, you know, that have that kind of size that are now public spaces.
Right, right. So how does the process begin of organizing so many people?
Well, there's a recruitment process, which in Germany had to happen largely in German, so I had to learn German. So the process started by learning German.
Oh my gosh!
Over there, but you know, it's pretty. It's different here than it is there because I grew up here. So of course, I had connections here. I'm a product of the San Francisco Unified School District. So my former middle school and my former high school are in the piece.
Nice. We'll be announcing today's lunch menu about 3:15.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you very much. That's great. A second lunch. So here it was, of course, I mean, it was kind of like falling off a log, but
But still, to get the commitment of these ensembles, you've got the San Francisco Contemporary Music Players that are being involved, Francisco Girls Chorus, some of the San Francisco Symphony Community of Music Makers, as well as several chamber choruses, the Golden Gate Philharmonic, high school groups, youth groups.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a lot. I mean, we cast the net really wide, and you know, when you want 600 people, I made recruitment trips out here, and I went physically, got on BART, you know, at a moment's notice if some conductor would let me talk to their orchestra, and just went and presented the project, made a pitch. I went all over the Bay Area and just made a pitch and met directors. I showed up with my maps and my videos from Berlin, you know. And in Berlin, when I was first starting, I remember I walked around a neighborhood I was staying in, and I just sort of noticed a sign for a music school, you know, and I just walked in there and introduced myself in mediocre German. And it's, you know, it's a major, major part of the I'd say even of the creative process. It's a major part of it.
Mm-hmm. So once these people are involved, are they all, what sort of music are they? They're not all reading the same music. It's not like a simultaneous performance
of one
piece of music. So
it can't
is involved?
Yeah, you're right. It's true. It can't really be that because aside from the fact that, in fact, groups that are west of other groups can't hear them because the wind carries sound to the east. So, you know, you can't.
Is that a rule of thumb that I don't know about? Is that doesn't it depend on which way the wind's blowing?
Yes, these two airfields, though, generally have air currents moving because in San Francisco it's off the ocean.
I see. Yeah.
So in general, I got lucky. I didn't have to like reorchestrate the whole, like, you know, the actual cartographic elements of the piece. I didn't actually have to redo entirely because the wind direction was similar.
Okay.
There's that, and there's also the fact that the piece, as it broadcasts, right, as it gets larger and the groups move away from each other, they get far enough away from each other so that although a listener standing between them can hear both of them, they can't hear each other anymore. So there are all these kinds of things that had to be taken into account. And so the interesting thing is actually not simultaneity. It's actually like different things coming from different places. So what I'm trying to do is create an experience for the listener where they can move around in the space because the park will be open and there won't be seating.
Right,
you know?
Right.
They can kind of design a listening experience for themselves by walking around and combining things that they hear with other things they hear.
So the musicians aren't necessarily fixed in one place either.
No, they don't. They never play and walk at the same time. I always joke that I don't want this to be, you know, for the cellists, like, you know, Woody Allen
yeah,
experience.
One of the best scenes in all films.
I love that.
Yeah.
So they don't walk and play at the same time, but they do walk. And there are whole 2 to 4 minute long sections where a group will be instructed to finish playing something and then they walk to another location, which is usually articulated by some de Souvero sculpture.
Halfway between that
and a path or something like that.
So let's talk about the arc of the event. Mm. How long is it to take place? Is there a beginning, a middle, an end? Is it all strictly by time? Are there other ways of communicating with these other groups for them to hear what's going on?
I'd say yes to all of those things.
All right.
Yes.
Nice talking with you,
Lisa. No, it does have an arc to it. I mean, it is a composed experience, you know, so it is, and it's a little bit less than an hour long, or depends to some degree on them, what they do with the end of it. I've given them an open-ended kind of invitation at the end of the piece, and we'll see how long it goes on.
Right.
But the shape of it is, there are some things that will always happen at the same time, because the leaders of the groups from the San Francisco Contemporary Music Players are each wearing watches that are actually set to the atomic clock. So they're all synchronized. And that means that some things in the piece will happen at exactly the same time, or more or less exactly the same time. So, for example, what you saw, what you heard at the beginning there, the material that you heard there has been transformed into a larger, much larger section that now will always happen at 23 minutes after the hour in all three performances. So,
will the Crissy Field be the largest of the gatherings to date?
No. I mean, with musicians, yes. For the space, no.
All right, yeah.
Tempelhof is over twice as large as
Crissy
Field.
Well, let's talk about the Tempelhof performance in Berlin. How was that received, and how did you document the event?
Yeah, the documentation was really robust. So I'm happy to say there's a Vimeo page that has lots of films, and there's a beautiful documentary. In fact, the filmmaker, Fred Plassmann, who filmed the process, he was with me from the very, very beginning. So he's been working on this project with me for 3 years now. And he's actually coming here, courtesy of the German consulate.
Very nice.
He's coming to be the film, to be the videographer for this event as well. And that documentation has been really tremendous, but of course we didn't have it when we were preparing for Berlin, and I also was learning German, and so it was actually tough. It was tough to kind of try to explain to people what it was that I wanted to have happen there, how I saw it happening. It was not that easy to do, and for a long time, you know, people were very skeptical. I'm really actually surprised and delighted that so many people sort of signed on faith, you know, this crazy project. But
right.
They like crazy projects in Berlin. And then when it happened, it was really wonderfully received. You can see in the films, people were just smiling, and there were, you know, live TV crews there, and people were, and the children just showed up with cellos that hadn't even come to the rehearsal. Like, it was really magical. So, you know, I mean, here, of course, it's less of a sleeper thing because people know me. I grew up here. And also the San Francisco Girls Chorus has already been part of one of the Airfield broadcasts because they came to Berlin and they were part of it already. So
they've
been great advocates for the piece here with their friends who are in orchestras and schools and stuff. So.
Right. Well, it's sure to be a sonic experience on many different levels. Everyone will experience it differently, that's for sure.
Yeah.
What are the plans for perhaps recording the San Francisco event?
Well, we can't really record it. I mean, it's impossible to record it. We will do the same thing. Fred's going to have his, you know, where there'll be cameras out there, but I don't want there to be some big film crew-like experience. The park is open. You know, people can go and just walk around and experience it, and I want there to be that feeling. So, yeah, we'll be capturing things, and people will be capturing it on social media, and we'll continue to create social media short films and things like that for people to see. We're doing that in rehearsals and stuff now and workshops. So it's going to be documented in this kind of grassroots way, and we're going to continue to sort of make it to document the process for online, you know, so for people to be able to kind of experience it from wherever they are in the world and follow the project.
Right. Well, at least if you're in Chrissy Field, you can't miss this performance.
That's right.
It's going to be on October 26th and 27th of this month. San Francisco's Chrissy Field will be turned into a vast musical canvas as part of this expansive project, the Chrissy Broadcast. Lisa Bialava, I thank you for taking some time today.
Thank you
so
much for
having
me.
I know we can learn a little bit more at lisabialava.typepad.com. I'll spell that out for you. LISA. It'll be on our website as well. LISABIELAWA. lisabialava.typepad.com. And we're going to conclude with just a little excerpt of some of the rehearsal process of the dress rehearsal for the Tempelhof.
Fantastic.
Broadcast. Lisa, thanks again for taking
the time.
Thanks
so much for having me, guys.
Some of the sounds that will be part of the soundscape for Lisa Bialava's Chrissy Broadcast on October 26th and 27th. typepad.com for more information. We'll post that at klw.org under our Open Air page. Good afternoon. David Latulipe with you for Open Air here on Local Public Radio, KALW. Pleased to welcome back Marissa Wolf from the folks at Crowded Fire Theater. She's directing a performance of Lauren Gunderson's crackling modern farce, The Taming, here in October at the Thick House on San Francisco's Potrero Hill on 18th Street between Carolina and Arkansas. Marissa and Lauren, welcome to Open Air.
Hi. Thank you.
I should say, Marissa, welcome back. We
Thank
had you,
you
talking about some of the other productions that you were here.
That's right.
Recently. The Taming is a very timely thing that's going to be taking on some political satire. I'm wondering, Lauren, could you give us a brief excerpt or a synopsis of what's going to be happening on stage?
Sure. You might recognize it from the closed halls of Congress these days as well. It's a similar story, but it's about three people who come from totally opposing political perspectives who are shut in the same room and have to figure out how to work together or destroy each other. but it is funny how timely this just became, especially because the second act, we go back to our country's founding, 1787, the same kind of contentious, partisan, taking hostage of one's issues type of atmosphere that we're unfortunately seeing right now. So strangely and unfortunately timely.
Yeah, indeed. So how has the reaction been to the actors realizing it's so timely?
Yeah, it is interesting. I mean, being able to come into the rehearsal room right now, and we're just about to start previews tonight, and the sense of how relevant so much of what, even I would say that our experience in the room right now is how certain phrases and words and ideas are popping in a way that they haven't even before. Lauren, there's quite a bit about compromise and the idea of compromise and how difficult compromise is, and it's always been at the heart of the play, but it is resonating in a new way.
Certainly. And there's one historical element about how James Madison was very afraid, as a lot of the founders were, of this thing called factions, which is basically special interest groups, small contingents of, you know, vocal people. Exactly. And of course, President Obama just yesterday said this small faction of Republicans and the this and that. And I said, oh, there's our word. Thank you, Mr. President.
It's pretty amazing. Thinking historically as well, as you probably realize that ACT 1776 is ending its run, and John Adams' famous line opening the show, he's come to the conclusion that one useless man is called a disgrace, two become a law firm, and three or more become a Congress. So I'm sure the same holds true with this.
Yes.
Now,
Marissa,
this is being billed as a rolling world premiere. Mm-hmm. Could you share with us again what that concept means?
Yeah, well, we're excited to be part of this, and actually for a show that we did with Lauren a couple years ago called Exit Pursued by a Bear, that was our first national rolling world premiere. Basically, it's the opportunity for a new play to be seen around the country in multiple different venues, and give it a really wonderful life, a lifespan, so that it's not just one discrete production that sort of pops up and goes away. And so for this production, we have various sister companies around the country who we're in conversation with, having them put it in their season next year. And right now, actually opening at the same time as us, is a production up in Seattle at Arts West. So it's been pretty exciting experience because the Arts West folks have, you know, they've had to receive our edits and cuts because it's a new play.
Right.
And so we've all been in conversation across the West Coast about the play.
Right. Lauren, are you encountering different aspects of these characters as they're portrayed differently in different cities?
Absolutely, yeah. Certain jokes are funnier 100 miles apart from each other or so.
Right.
It's all about the rhythm and the chemistry of the cast and so much theater, but certainly in this where it's, as I mentioned, three people stuck in a room together and they don't exist without the other. So that kind of artistic chemistry and the working relationship with the actors, their sense of humor, their rhythms, their timing is key. Mm-hmm. So that's you know, slightly different here and there. But it's a chance to learn, as Marissa said, across the West Coast.
Right. Now, this is an all-female cast,
yes.
the three characters. Was that a conscious choice or just happened to be the way that these characters evolved in your head?
That's a great question, because at first I pitched Marissa that it was going to be a two-character play, one man, one woman. And now it's a three-person, all-female.
Is she over budget on
play.
That?
She checked in along the way.
Okay,
it's true.
Sure.
Well, but that's what's been wonderful, is working with Crowded Fire and working with Marissa again. There's nothing that replaces the trust when you're making something big and complicated like this play. So when I come to her and say, I need another character, and I don't get the, well, tell me why, let's talk it through, I get, absolutely. Who do you want? So that kind of permission and sense of like joyful excitement at what on earth is she going to bring in next, I think really is part of the reason why the play is... whatever crackle there is in the play is because of that sense of like, all right, let's go for it. Let's try it. Let's just, you know, dive.
That's Lauren Gunderson. She's the playwright of The Taming, directed by my other guest, Marissa Wolf. Marissa, what do you see in Lauren's writing that sparkles for you?
You know, I have to say, I think it's her dialogue, and I've seen and read a lot of her plays, and in every play across the board, the dialogue is so alive and so sharp, and often in the comedies, of course, extremely funny. But there's something about that. Lauren has this amazing ear. There's something about the taking the pedestrian and kind of taking it up a notch, so that it's filled with humor, and also there's something kind of scathing and fierce about the dialogue. So that for me is so much of the heartbeat of this play comes from the sparring with words.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm afraid we'll have to leave it at that. I mean, we're looking forward to learning more about the contemporary politics of it. The play is called The Taming, directed by my guest Marissa Wolf. Lauren Gunderson, thanks for taking a little bit of time to explaining the plot. It sounds like it's going to be a very timely piece of political rhetoric that we can all enjoy.
Should be a lot of fun. Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you.
Crowded Fire Theater is up at the Thick House in San Francisco's Potrero Hill. The run is from the 3rd, which is tonight, previewing tonight, tomorrow, Friday, and through Sunday. Opens on Monday, October 7th. More information at Crowded Theater.
Crowdedfire.org.
Crowdedfire.org. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
The opening bars of Mendelssohn's Midsummer Night's Dream. It'll be one of the featured works by the San Francisco Symphony in the days ahead, with the guest conductor Pablo Eras Casado, Spanish conductor who returns to the stage of the San Francisco Symphony. In 2011, he was announced as principal conductor of the Orchestra of St. Luke's in New York, beginning a 4-year term, including an annual concert at Carnegie Hall. I managed to catch up with him at his hotel high atop Nob Hill, just yesterday, as his performance in the first run of this series begins in just about 35 minutes from now in Davies Hall. Here's that conversation.
Tom, thank you for coming.
Your visit here in San Francisco is being billed as a 2-week Mendelssohn Thomas Addis mini festival. Now, why the combination, which seems to me more of a juxtaposition than a combination of music of Mendelssohn and Thomas Addis?
I think it's a combination because even if those figures, they seem to be rather distant and not related, in many ways they are very much related. This, we came to this idea after several months of discussions where we found ideas to program like 7 of those mini festivals, and finally we condensed it in this idea of having an important figure of the 21st century music, and an important figure of the Romantic, because we wanted to go to the Romanticism, German Romanticism, and Mendelssohn is a figure which, believe it or not, it's underrated nowadays, and you cannot find his music so often programmed in the concert halls.
Well, it's interesting that Mendelssohn is one who rediscovered the music of Bach as well.
Exactly. Because his figure was very interesting in many ways. It's the most cosmopolitan and let's say international composer at that time, because he was interested in art, in literature, in traveling, in different cultures, in integrating in his music, but also in not only as a composer but as a conductor, aesthetics not only from his time but also from the past, what for the time was very new and modern. So looking to the past and trying to rediscover and to rethink the music of his predecessors was a new attitude, and this is a very important aspect, very important aspect for me to bring him to this festival, because Tom Addis, being also a contemporary composer, a man of our time, he's someone who also welcomes in his music different influences. He's someone who has this kind of prodigy and virtuosity in his writing. He's able to write in many different kind of languages and with different influences from music of our time, but also from the past. And this is and the piece, the three studies on Couperin that we are playing in the first program is a very wonderful example of this, when he goes to the early French Baroque and he's able to revisit and to make a reconstruction in modern
language
of that music, respecting hugely the fundamentals of that music. Mendelssohn did very much that when he composed lots of his pieces are revisiting Bach, revisiting the Baroque, and influenced by that aesthetic. And so this is there are a couple of those influences and parallelisms between those two figures, and those are two important figures and personalities of their times, who are a good excuse to welcome music from other periods and trying to find links and connections with other aesthetics, like in the case of Stravinsky when he revisits the Baroque, or in the case of Lully, it's a good excuse to play Lully when others it's composing on Couperin's music, etc. So there are very interesting angles of this apparently not connected or juxtaposed couple.
You mentioned a couple of the other composers involved in this week one of the festival, Lully and Stravinsky, the violin concerto in D major. Lila Josefowicz is going to be the soloist for that. Have you worked with Lila before?
No, it's the very first time, and I'm glad because we know each other since a long time, but we never got the chance to be together on stage, so I'm really, really happy.
And when did you first encounter the music of Thomas Saddis?
Oh, this is also a very, very nice coincidence, because the very first time I came to the continent, not only to this continent, to the continent, the very first time I flew over the pond was in my debut conducting at Carnegie Hall with the ensemble ACJLW. This is an ensemble of young people and it's postgraduates of Juilliard School mainly. And in that program, which was a kind of nice statement of, and also a kind of parallelism with which I'm doing here now, in that program I conducted music by Elliot Carter, by Tom Addis, and Johann Sebastian Bach. And that was the first time I conducted Addis, and we did his chamber symphony. And that was the first time I met his music, and it was really a wonderful experience. In that case, the chamber symphony is very much influenced by the jazz, rhythm and blues, and the modern music of our time. And he really, in a very detailed and hyper sophisticated way of writing, he arrives to make the feeling that the music sounds easy sounding, or trying to welcome other languages, other aesthetics in his own writing. So, and that was a wonderful experience for me, and getting to know his music.
And so the last time you were in San Francisco was what, last season?
That was last season, exactly. I think it was about February, yeah.
Did that also part of a themed program? Was it a series of concerts, or was it just a coming in as a guest conductor?
Well, the past three seasons, I've been every season here, and last season, from the very beginning, I was so lucky that they gave me the opportunity to program in a way that I could connect very different styles and influences, and I could show to the audience different connections and ideas, aesthetics. And last season was the case also, that I could offer, I could bring to San Francisco the music by Magnus Lindberg. We played Expo, a piece which was premiered by the New York Philharmonic in 2010, but never was played in the West Coast. So that was a San Francisco premiere. And there's a kind of tradition in these last 4 years that every time I come here, there's a San Francisco premiere and a San Francisco Symphony Orchestra premiere. And last season was Magnus Lindberg's Expo, Liszt Second Piano Concerto, and Prokofiev 5.
So do you purposely choose the best time of year to come to San Francisco? You realize it's not this beautiful weather all the time.
Every time I came here, it was beautiful weather. I have to say. I mean, I've been very, very lucky, and I wish. I mean, I hope it will be all the time like this, because this time of the year in Europe, it's already almost winter. I'm coming from Munich now, and Munich we had a couple of days of sun, but not quite like this. This is really wonderful.
Well, tell us about the second week of music. It's also going to be Mendelssohn and Otis.
The second week is a week in which we are welcoming some singers. We are welcoming the San Francisco Symphony Choir. It's the very first time, as I didn't realize until yesterday, I had my first rehearsal with the choir preparing the Erste Walpurgisnacht, the cantata by Mendelssohn. And after 5 years working very intensely in this country, I've never worked with a choir before. This is my first experience with an American choir, and I'm really thrilled that it's here and it's with this piece, which I know very well as a singer and as a conductor now, of course. And in this program, the orchestra offered me the opportunity of working with a choir. I thought, first of all, Walpurgisnacht, the Erste Walpurgisnacht, is one of the greatest masterpieces of the 19th century, and it's very much underrated. This is, since the very beginning of my conducting life, I've had a kind of, I felt a kind of compromise and devotion to music, which is of the very best level. But for one reason or the other, it's not so often performed. We are talking now about Mendelssohn. We are talking about one of his most important pieces. But for some reason, this piece is never performed in the concert hall, not only in America, but in Europe as well. And this is really the peak of his compositional style, Walpurgisnacht. And so I proposed them this piece as a starting point. And then, of course, was for me quite evident to find the parallelism with Tom's music through the Tempest. In Mendelssohn we have a Goethe's text, in the Tempest we have Shakespeare, and around that, of course, and when we find the literary theme, the connection, I said, why don't we start with Midsummer's Night's Dream and make this Shakespearean first half between the fairy tale and the let's say the drama in Shakespeare, and then we move into Goethe in Walpurgisnacht, and I think it's a beautiful way of connecting different pieces, different styles, two different composers through the highest literary quality.
Well, we look forward to your next combination or juxtaposition of composers and your next visit to the San Francisco Symphony. And best of luck on what looks like some really wonderful concerts both this week and next.
Thank you. Yeah. In fact, we are thinking for next season already in having this kind of mini festival. And probably it's not going to be this kind of double portrait of composers. As I said before, this is a kind of is a very good excuse to put together different ideas and perspectives and horizons of music and combining and approaching different periods of the music. But next year maybe we will go in a different way. I cannot say at the moment nothing, but in any case, for me, it's absolute joy, and I feel so lucky that I can do this in San Francisco, because in the course of the last 3 seasons, where I've been here every season, every year, I've had the chance of conducting so many varied music. The number of composers that I've done in 3 years here, it's just amazing. We've done De Falla and Ravel and Stravinsky and Liszt and Lindbergh, Shostakovich, Kurtak, Dalla Piccola, Mendelssohn. And, you know, it's something quite special. So now I think the orchestra knows me. I think I know the orchestra. And the very best thing is that I believe that this orchestra is able to do everything at the very best level. And so the possibility of creating in 2 weeks a context and a festival where you can just literally, like tomorrow, we start with Lully, which is early Baroque music, not even the most established style of Handel, Bach, but early Baroque, French Baroque, which is a very particular and special style of creating a sound, and moving immediately to Tom Adders and passing through Stravinsky, revisiting the Baroque music. So all those connections, for me, it's just amazing that I can do with the same orchestra.
And a process of discovery for you as well.
Of course. And it's very important for me. Every time I program with an orchestra, and especially with the orchestras I really know well and I have a affinity and a connection, it needs to be a challenge for me as well. It needs to be. I never program for any other reason. I try to challenge myself, to challenge my intellectual, artistic, and aesthetic perspectives. And I try to challenge the orchestras and the audience's perspectives as well. I think this is very important. It's not just a concert experience. It's not just about sitting there and, you know, being delighted about a piece we know very well, and delighted about the way they play, because they play wonderfully. It's, you know, it needs to move something in your soul, but also in your brain, in your ideas, in your perspective about the history, the history of art, and it needs to. The concert experience needs to open your perspectives on music and what do you think it's the musical experience and the artistic experience.
And beyond the music, bringing it into your life.
Exactly. And that, I think that attitude, when I feel in that way, when the musicians also feel that this program or this week, or it's something special, it's something unique, something challenging, and there is a special atmosphere and energy, I think this transmits to the audience. When we go on stage and it's not just doing, and I'm not, of course, saying that this is not great and wonderful, it's not just doing again Beethoven's Esperanto Concerto and Brahms 4. Of course, it's wonderful music, but it's not about just sitting there and being, you know, being comfortable. We need to be challenging, to open new perspectives and new windows on the history of music, on the tradition, and on the concert experience.
Well, we look forward to these performances, and I hope we can talk again when you come back.
I hope so, too.
A brief excerpt from the Metropolitan Opera 2012 production of The Tempest, music by Thomas Addis. That's music that will be heard next week for the first time here with the San Francisco Symphony as part of conductor Pablo Eras Casado's two-week stint with the symphony. Music of Mendelssohn and Thomas Addis featured. This afternoon, actually about 15 minutes from now, and this weekend, music of Lully and Stravinsky also on the program. Information at sfsymphony.org. It's one of the picks of music critic Joshua Cosman for our monthly conversation. This week's segment also pre-taped for broadcast at this time. The busy performing arts month of October is upon us, and as our regular first Thursday feature here on Open Air, Joshua Cosman joins me to share his classical music picks for the month ahead. Hey, Joshua.
Hi, David. How are you?
Busy month indeed.
It is. You know, October is always the busiest month of the year for the arts, for the performing arts, and this month is no exception, so we're going to riff right through this and see how many of these we can get in a single, in one fell swoop, as it were. The San Francisco Symphony has a very exciting full month of October coming in Davies Hall. We are, as you said, we have pre-taped this because as we're going out on the air, I am in Davies Hall listening to Pablo Eras Casado conduct the first of 2 weeks with the San Francisco Symphony. The Spanish conductor is a wonderful and very inventive musician who's been in Davies a number of times with the symphony, and every time he gets sort of more interesting, and his range of repertoire is absolutely fascinating. This month he's got a 2 week lineup devoted to, wait for it, Mendelssohn and Thomas Addis. And Thomas Addis, of course, the wonderful young English composer. Mendelssohn is Mendelssohn. I don't know what they have in common. I'm hoping to find out. Other than that, I know the second week of concerts next week, October 10th through 12th, will feature music from Addis's second opera, The Tempest, and Mendelssohn's music from Midsummer Night's Dream. So there's a Shakespeare connection.
Sure. I noticed they're also both interested in the Baroque era music. Mendelssohn was, and I know that Addis is.
That's very true. And this week, starting this afternoon and running through the 6th, Addis's Three Studies from Couperin is going to be on the program, also along with Stravinsky's Violin Concerto with the great Lila Josefowicz, the MacArthur Fellow and violinist, as the soloist.
Mm-hmm.
And Tom Addis is also in town. He's going to be joining the musicians of the San Francisco Symphony for a chamber concert tonight, Tuesday, October 3rd. Thursday, October 3rd. Thank you for that. In Davies for a program of chamber music of his own and others.
Right. And speaking of the others, the Debussy Trio for Flute, Viola, and Harp is going to be performed with Doug Rioff on harp. And as
a favorite
flutist,
piece of yours,
it
I
is
know.
Indeed, Catherine Payne on flute. I can't wait to hear that. I wish I could hear that, actually.
Okay.
Busy month indeed, because tomorrow night's also the opening of the Berklee Symphony.
That's right.
So it's,
no, that's also tonight.
Right.
Yeah. That's why I'm going to be skipping the chamber concert. The Berklee Symphony opens its season tonight. The music director, Joana Carneiro, has had to withdraw because of medical reasons, and she'll be replaced by Gerard Schwartz. On the program is a new work that I'm looking forward to by the Berklee composer Edmund Campion, a piece called Ossicles, which the title refers to the little bones in your ear, and it has something to do with the relationship between sound and music. Not sure what that is, but we will find out. That information on that is at berkleesymphony.org. Later in the month in Davies Hall, we'll have the San Francisco Symphony conducted by Edwin Outwater, who used to be the resident conductor with the orchestra, which is to say sort of the Michael T.T. assistant guy. And he's now gone on to a good career of his own. He's got an orchestra in Canada, the Kitchener-Waterloo Symphony, where he's doing a lot of very interesting programming things, and also he's a very dynamic and interesting conductor. He's got a program of music from sort of a lot of Eastern European music by Ligeti and by Dvorak and Ludosławski. Also the pianist Simon Trpceski, I hope I'm getting that right, T-R-P-C, there's a lot of consonants. Trpceski will be playing the Prokofiev Third Piano Concerto, and that's the 24th through the 26th in Davies Hall. Meanwhile, over across Grove Street at the San Francisco, at the War Memorial Opera House, the San Francisco Opera continues its season with two new productions. Opening next week on October 8th is a new production of Verdi's Falstaff with the great Bryn Terrible in the title role. This is the first time that he will have been there since 2000. Since June of 2000 when he sang in The Rake's Progress of Stravinsky. And that's a new production with that's directed by Olivier Tambosi and directed by Frank Philip Schlossmann, with music director Nicola Luisotti conducting. Then in the meantime, Bryn Terrible is going to take a break and run up to Sonoma State University, where he'll give a recital at the new Green Music Center, a program of music from the British Isles and also songs by the German Romantics.
On October 13th, information at gmc.sonoma.edu.
Exactly. Later in the month, on October 22nd, we've got a new production of Wagner's opera, The Flying Dutchman. The San Francisco opera season is sort of devoted to two of the three great centennial observations of the operatic year. This is the bicentennial of both Verdi and Wagner. So we've got Verdi covered with Falstaff and Wagner with The Flying Dutchman. Greer Grimsley is going to be singing the title role. And Petra Maria Schnitzer will be Santa. Patrick Summers returns to conduct. This is a new production which was directed and designed by Petrica Ionesco, who did the production of Cyrano de Bergerac here last season.
Not familiar with either of those singers, so I'm looking forward to that.
Greer Grimsley is a very powerful Wagnerian bass baritone who just came off doing a run of Wotan at the Seattle Opera, where he's developed that role and also sung a lot of the other Wagner baritone roles. He's been here at San Francisco, but not for a while, and I forget offhand what it was that he did. In Seattle, opposite his Wotan was Fricka. The great Stephanie Blythe sang Fricka. She is not going to be on the Opera House stage this fall, but she is going to be in Berkeley on October 20th with the Canadian period instrument ensemble Les Violons du Roi, or since it's a Y, maybe I'm supposed to say Les Violons du Roi. I'm not sure on my early French pronunciation. Bernard Labadie is conducting, and that's a program with music from Handel's Giulio Cesare and Haydn's Arianna Naxos. Sorry. That's presented in Berkeley at Hertz Hall, Cal Performances, www.calperformances.org.
Mm-hmm.
Should I just keep rolling here?
Yeah, sure.
Just keep going through this.
It's a month.
This is how it's going to be, you know, day and night. Also in Berkeley, thanks to Cal Performances at Hertz Hall, we've got a duo recital by two very exciting young vocal artists, the soprano Jessica Rivera and mezzo-soprano Kelly O'Connor, both of whom have been around off and on over the last few years, sung a lot of new music by John Adams and other composers. And they're going to be giving a joint recital featuring the world premiere of two new song cycles written for them by composers Jonathan Leshnoff and David Bruce, respectively. So they'll each kind of get a chance to do their own world premiere. They'll also be joining forces in music by Debussy, Mendelssohn, Gounod, and others. The accompanist is a man named Robert Spano, who's best known as a conductor. He's the music director of the Atlanta Symphony.
Sure, he was with the Brooklyn Philharmonic before that.
That's right, before that.
When I was in New York.
Exactly.
He's also a former flutist, so I also know.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay. Yeah, well, he's apparently a pianist, and he's going to accompany those two singers in that performance. So that's on October 13th at Hertz Hall. Again, calperformances.org. And one other thing I want to make sure to get into before the time runs out is that pianist Andras Schiff returns to continue his multi-year Bach celebration with two recitals in Davies Hall that are co-presented by San Francisco Symphony and San Francisco Performances on October 6th. That's this coming Sunday. He'll play the six partitas of Bach, and the following Sunday, October 13th, he'll combine the Goldberg variation with Beethoven's Diabelli variations.
How lucky we are to have him back for those things.
He is really remarkable and playing Bach on the piano in a way that makes you hear new things in it always that you hadn't heard before. So that's at Davies Hall. You can find information on that either through the San Francisco Symphony website at sfsymphony.org or through San Francisco Performances, which is at performances.org.
We should also mention the symphony one more time, sfsymphony.org, that just in time for the Halloween and the San Francisco Symphony Hitchcock Fest cycle will be performed on the 30th, The Lodger on 10/31 on Halloween night, Vertigo moving into the month of October.
November.
And North by Northwest on November 2nd with live music accompaniment.
Exactly. So this will be a chance to hear those Bernard Herrmann scores in their full acoustic glory. I'm looking forward to it immensely.
Well, it sounds like you're going to need a lot of coffee to get through this month of October, Josh.
I'm tired just thinking about it, David. I don't know how we're going to do it, but it's going to be a wild ride, and I'm looking forward to it.
Thanks for sharing your picks.
Thanks for having me.
That's the music of Johann Sebastian Bach as performed by Andras Schiff. To conclude our time together this week on Open Air, I've been your host, David LaTulipe. I welcome your comments at our website, kalw.org. It's there you can not only leave comments, but hear any of our past shows over the past year or so. There's a search box there for either an artist or just search for Open Air at kalw.org. My thanks once again to Neil Swinkles for helping with production of Open Air. Coming up next, it's an hour of news from the BBC. Do stay tuned as you enjoy some music of Johann Sebastian Bach. The artistry of pianist Andras Schiff from the Courant. It's actually the Sarabande from Partita No. 1 in B-flat. You'll hear all six partitas performed on October 6th by Andras Schiff. Information at sfperformances.org.